This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We want to pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing projects which continue to this day. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Sovereignty was never ceded.
Hello and welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we bring you bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes. And of course, we're the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, which you can find on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Auspol Shitposting. My name's Noon, also known as Ino Funkenstein. I'm the admin and creator of Auspol Shitposting, and with me today is my co-host.
Hey, what's up? Zach the Snack. I'm just some guy. I'm a mod on the group, but I don't really do much modding.
Yeah, no one does much modding, including me.
Yeah, especially yesterday where we had a bit of a non-man takeover in honor of Slutwalk 2019, which happened in Melbourne yesterday, and potentially in other cities around the country. I probably should have checked that. But I went along and it was fantastic, really inspiring to see so many people, you know, standing up for the rights of women to dress however the fuck they want without getting harassed by men, and not just women, of course, but everybody who doesn't identify as a man, because it's rough out there.
We've talked about Slutwalk a couple of times on the show, and we obviously had Kira, who is one of the organizers.
And Lisbeth, who was another of the organizers.
Totally. It was nice to have sort of Slutwalk actually happen, and it seemed like it was a great event. I didn't go because I'm both sad and lazy. But good on you for getting along, Zach. And we met some... Oh, you met some listeners of the show out there, which is cool.
Yeah. Shout out Cake, who I met for the first time. Nice to meet other shit posters in real life.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fantastic event. Congratulations to the organizers on such a cool... on organizing such a fantastic array of speakers. There were some really powerful speeches and also like poems going on. There were some nice ACAB and fuck the police chants going on, which was good. Testimony from sex workers as well. So it was really and like a strong trans and gender non-conforming presence as well. So it was like, yeah, it all really came together. If it was a really inclusive space and I was there by myself as a cishet white guy, and I honestly felt a little bit uncertain about going along, I guess, and maybe inserting myself into that space. But even to me, the space was really welcoming. Everybody was really friendly. And the same was true of Slutoween when I went to that fundraiser that they had a couple of weeks ago.
And as you've alluded, Slutwalk really goes out of their way to be inclusive and diverse. And there were some really awesome posters that they did in the lead up to Slutoween and Slutwalk that had, you know, people with disabilities and people with different sorts of bodies and people of different race and that sort of thing. So yeah, Slutwalk, hell yeah. Great organization doing great work. And as you said, we were asked by the organizers if we might consider doing something on the Auspol Shitposting group about sort of to market or celebrate it or a bit of sort of digital allyship. And so yeah, yesterday we had a no cis men posting please day, which obviously was like not super enforceable because we didn't want to, like, I don't know, assume
anybody's identity.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was pretty good. And there were a bunch of posts from women and gender non-conforming people. And it was, it was a really nice vibe. And I personally found it really hard not to engage in all of the discussion and had to, like, catch myself a couple times. I did post one comment because I'm a bad person. But
once again, it's real tough to be a cishet white.
It's very hard, especially in
struggle.
An internet group that I run and have a dictator-like control over.
Shit-tater, but yes.
Yes.
So
cool. Well, I was going to ask you to talk about the entree, but that was going to be Slutwalk. So I hope you all enjoyed that delicious entree. And let's move right along to...
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
So, something I want to say cool, but that doesn't quite describe it. I find it difficult to put into words how I feel about this, and I'm sure that a lot of people share that experience. But Behruz Buchani, who has been in prison for the past 5 years by the Australian government in Papua New Guinea, initially on Manus Island and then at a couple of other locations, is free. He's out of the Australian immigration system. He's in New Zealand.
Currently in New Zealand on a temporary visa, and it looks like he's going to be resettled in a third country, possibly the United States. I think the New Zealand government would be happy to take him, but the Australian government are really leaning on them heavily not to do that.
Yeah, cool country.
Australia, yes.
So if you don't know Behruz, he was the first person to start reporting from Manus Island. He wrote some pieces for The Guardian. He was tweeting. He wrote an entire book via text message.
He's a professional journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
From his sort of home life in Iran.
Yeah.
And sort of continued doing that in Manus.
Yeah, in fact, the reason he was seeking refuge was because he was in danger in Iran for his pro-Kurdish reporting. He wrote this book, No Friend But the Mountains, which is an old Kurdish saying, and that, you know, which is a really long and involved book about the experience of being imprisoned on Manus and his kind of attempts to try and understand it. I read that book and I found it incredibly moving just deeply enraging and saddening and something that really put me in touch, I guess, to a certain extent, or as much as someone like me can experience the reality of that situation. Mm. But it's also a beautiful book. It's beautifully written. He's an extremely lyrical author. It's kind of written half of it in verse, and it's full of kind of allegory and philosophy and metaphor. So to hear that he was free, he's someone who, you know, after reading and following his writing for so many years and you know, viewing him as this kind of paragon of, I guess, like...
dignified resistance.
Yeah, dignity under pressure, for sure. To see him free is really complicated. I feel so happy for him that he's outside of the Australian. He's finally out of this horrible, disgusting, punitive, racist, fascist immigration system. But also to, you know, call him brave or call him a hero, I don't think, you know, does justice to the complexity of the situation. You know, he should never have to have been those things.
But something else that does no justice to the complexity of the situation is this absolutely flaming hot blurst take from everyone's favorite Labour minister, Christina Keneally.
Oh boy, I bet she said
something.
It's not real nuanced.
Respectful and insightful. Okay. So she tweeted out, "Labour welcomes news Behruz Buchani has had the opportunity to depart PNG. We look forward for Mr. Buchani having the opportunity to permanently resettle in a third country as soon as possible, wherever that may be." And then she attached the official Labour statement about it onto this tweet. And just like, she's the immigration minister.
Shadow
immigration minister.
Home Affairs.
Home Affairs, right. Which, like, in the actual Liberal government, the Home Affairs Department controls the Immigration Department, and it seems to be that Labour is sort of following suit on that. But she and the Labour Party have been not only complicit, but like they started up these offshore refugee jails.
They were in power when Behruz Buchani
was put on that island,
imprisoned in the first place.
And he replied to this tweet and he said, "Such a ridiculous and unacceptable statement by Labour Party. You exiled me to Manus and you have supported this exile policy for years. I don't need you to welcome resettlement for me in a third country. I'm in a third country now and don't need you. If you're honest, do something for others who are suffering in PNG and Nauru. In my view, anyone who supports this barbaric policy is criminal and terrorist. Such a shameful statement by the Labour Party."
Which, that, you know, and that's it. And it's like, you want, on the one hand, there's this impulse, I guess you see this, you can be like, these hypocritical politicians have been smacked down by people whose suffering they're trying to co-opt for their own political benefit, and lol. But there's no fucking winners here, man.
No.
This guy's lost years of his life to this horrible system, and like, you know,
and it's still just, not resolved. Like, he's still without a country and a home.
Future is still uncertain. Mm. Absolutely. And I mean, I guess this is just extremely depressing in the sense of like, and that's why we've talked about Christina Keneally on this show like repeatedly, because these Labour are supposed to be the fucking alternative.
Yeah,
these are supposed to, they're supposed to be the people who say no, we're not comfortable with human rights violations. We're supposed to have a major party in this country
that says that. Yeah,
it just isn't outright fascist. Like, it's just it. I honestly don't think it's that much to ask for. And then not only can they not do that, but then they pretend. They come out with these weak ass statements, being like, "Oh, congratulations that you've made it out of our horrible game of death that we've put you in." Like, what the fuck kind of attitude is that?
There are a couple of tweets that from just, you know, random punters that I wanted to read out that I feel like summed up my opinion. The first one from Quantum Scumbag, who says, "Get, and I cannot stress this enough, absolutely fucked," which is just, you know, it's about right. There's another one from Parsect, who says, "Can't be humane, Tony Abbott might yell at them again." And J.R. Hennessy, you know, says, "The crucial... likes Behrouz Bouchani, thinks he shouldn't be on Manus, but he cannot ever come to Australia vote. An election swinger, that one." Which I think is, like, hits the nail on the head in that Christina Keneally and the Labour Party probably do think that being fake compassionate about this guy who they've tortured for 6 years might win them some votes. And, I mean, depressingly, it might. But, like...
The
cynicism of the tweet
totally
shows the cynicism of Christina Keneally and co.
And I think also, you know... Hennessy, who is great on Twitter, at JR Hennessy. That's a double N and a double S. And you should follow. But he makes a really good point, I think, which is that they've kind of maneuvered themselves into this absolutely ridiculous fucking position by trying to capitulate to the right on this immigration stuff, and then also trying to kind of virtue signal to the left as well, or anybody who gives a fuck about human rights, which, by the way, shouldn't be a partisan issue, you fucking monsters. They've painted themselves into this ridiculous corner where you're just pissing everybody off.
Yeah.
No one's on side at this stage. Like, take a fucking stand, grow a spine, and also fire Christina Keneally.
Yeah.
She's, I mean, I don't know who the fuck else from the Labour Party could possibly replace her and do a better job, but anyway, I'm pissed about this.
It's almost as if the Labour Party is structurally racist and incapable of being progressive.
Well, if that were true, Noon, then that would mean that representative parliamentary democracy in this country is broken and can never properly achieve change.
I would never say something like that.
Because,
I mean, with that kind of opinion, you might say something like a stalwart of Labour left, like, I don't know, Anthony Albanese, were he to be the leader, might not be a very effective force for progress in the country. And and I, for one, would be shocked at anyone making such a low, cynical comment.
Someone should make a parody rap about that, possibly using a song from a cultural era that few people relate to anymore.
Yeah, well...
Stay tuned!
We've got some exciting rap memes coming up for you, the listener, in the next week or two.
Anyway, look, to wrap this up, this is amazing news for Behrouz.
Yeah.
He, I'm sure, is not going to stop advocating for people who are still in this system.
Yeah.
The work is not done yet. There are still at least 50 men still on PNG, in our immigration system who need to be gotten out. And Behrouz himself, needs to find a permanent safe harbor for himself. So, we'll be looking out for more news on that as it comes, and just like, you know, solidarity with that guy. I mean, what a fucking incredible person. All right. Now it's time for our First Nations story. So this is probably, this is one of the two big stories of the week. And we are going to be very careful about the way that we speak about this because for reasons that we'll get into. But this is the story of Kumanjayi Walker, who is a Walpiri man from an area called Yuendumu, which is just outside of Alice Springs in the Northern Territory.
Like, just outside, is like 3 hours away. But yeah, it's in the middle of the Northern Territory.
By Northern Territory standards, just outside. And he was killed this week by police. And the officer who was involved in the shooting has been charged.
With murder?
With murder.
Which is not a first, but is very unusual.
Yeah, and a lot of people were surprised by that. And this, you know, it followed quite swiftly. It was only a couple of days after the event, and there were protests all around.
Yeah, it seems, from my cynical point of view, that the charges were laid mainly as a response to the protests in Uendamu and in Alice Springs, which I think probably put a bit of fear in the police department and made them realize that they couldn't sweep this under the rug.
Yeah. This is an awful story and one that we've heard too many times before.
In the very short time that we've been making this podcast, I think we've talked about 4 Indigenous deaths in Kasni.
Yeah, this is part of an ongoing pattern. This is not a new thing. These are not isolated incidents. And that, of course, is the whole point. We are not going to get too much into the details of the incident because now that this officer has been charged, the family of Kumanjayi Walker have asked that people don't say anything that could possibly be interpreted as biasing the jury in this case. They don't want anybody to say anything that could potentially jeopardize the prosecution.
Which isn't unusual. That's pretty standard. And, like, I mean, we saw it about George Pell recently and other situations that having media discussion about it can affect the outcome in court. And that's the last thing that we want to do or contribute to. Yes. We're just not going to discuss the events
in detail. And like specifically the family has asked that people don't use the name of the officer in question and they don't publish his photo. And also, by the way, if you don't have the family's permission, you shouldn't be publishing photos of Kumanjayi Walker either. And you also shouldn't be using his actual name. Kumanjayi is a surrogate name to use for people who have died because until the family says it's okay for you to use the name of someone who has died, it's disrespectful. Rather than talking about the incident itself, which, you know, we're probably not the best people to bring you that information we wanted to talk about, I guess, the discussion around it and the various reactions from official bodies that work in Uendamu and also the community itself. So one of the things that happened was a statement was released by the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation. This is a press release that they put out titled "Nurses Not Feeling Safe or Supported." And it reads, "Our condolences go out to the family of Kumanjayi Walker for their loss. We understand the frustration of the local Indigenous people and we sympathize with you. But," and that's in capital letters.
And then dot, 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 dot.
Several dots afterwards.
Yep.
"The nurses, midwives in Uendamu and Uelamu communities are uneasy about returning to or recommencing work in those communities." Because the main issue here is that healthcare workers feel unsafe in the midst of an Indigenous community who is grieving and who are rightfully fucking angry. But the people we really need to be thinking about are those people who are made to feel uncomfortable by that grief.
So I think that's not what this press statement is in response to. This statement is because the nurses who were on Uendamu left the day before this shooting, I think, or the day of, and that led to Kumanjayi Walker not being able to access medical care, or so we understand.
Yeah, and the community was
furious about it, completely understandably. And so this statement from the Nurses and Midwives Federation is basically being like, yeah, but it's not our fault. We were scared, so fuck it. Like, that's basically how it reads. It seems super insensitive and not constructive, and as you say, like, taking away from the grief of the community.
And to also, like, open a press release by saying, yeah, we're really sorry that a member of a community and family has been killed. But?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this, I guess, gives you a pretty good sense of the way that institutions respond to this kind of incident. It's about centering white discomfort over the safety of black people. So that was pretty depressing. I think they have since released another statement being like, They didn't apologize. The word sorry was not in their second statement. They did kind of like say, oh, we understand that our statement was a bit offensive or whatever. But like, I mean, who the fuck approved that in the first place? So the other thing that we wanted to talk about was what the demands of the community actually are. So obviously they're calling for a full and transparent investigation into Kumanjayi Walker's death. They're also asking for cops to leave their community. They're asking for no police in Yuendamu, and kind of attendant to that, they're asking for no guns in Yuendamu. And the police have responded by sending in more cops with bigger guns.
Yep.
There's been photos circulating of, cops with like assault weapons standing around in the community. So another really cool response. I guess it's important also to recognize that, as you say, Noon, the murder charges against this officer have been laid largely as a response to the activism by this community. Mm. And it's important to recognize the work of the Yuendamu people.
There's been some amazing footage out of Yuendamu and out of Alice of the people who live there protesting and grieving. And I think there was a smoking ceremony done in the actual police station.
Yes.
Where Kumanjayi Walker was held and then died.
It's a traditional ceremony that takes place at the location that somebody passes.
Yeah. The footage of it is really powerful. You actually sent me that, Zach, during the week, and it's very upsetting. It's like watching a funeral, but one that's full of rage and powerlessness, I think. But as you say, I think there's a felt sense of power and powerlessness, but these communities have actually shown that they can have an influence, and that these charges being laid is evidence of that, and the broader sort of attention that's being paid to this around the country is, I think, unusual for
a case like this.
Which is fabulous, though obviously horrifying that it's
needed. Look, I do think that, I mean, over the last few months, there actually has been a little bit more attention paid to Indigenous deaths in custody, you know, as the 10-year inquest took place, and the amazing activism and advocacy that her family did, which, you know, they've been campaigning for ages for the abolition of the public drunkenness laws, but also just to bring her case to light in the community. And, you know, like, I personally I'll never be able to relate to the amount of strength and determination that it takes to become an advocate or an activist in that situation in the midst of grief. All power to these First Nations people who are standing up and really putting this on the national agenda. And look, we won't speculate about how things go or how we want them to go, but
we will keep you updated.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Little change of tone.
Yeah, here's the old tonal whiplash. It's real. It's like our signature move, really.
To moving from heavy shit to memes
to extremely to meme shit and then back again.
Mm.
Do you guys like it? I don't know.
Let us know and leave us a review on iTunes. Be like, stop with the emotional whiplash or whatever. We'll know what you're talking about.
We alternate happy and sad episodes.
Anyway, it is now time for
Shitpost of the Week.
And, of course, this is a Simpsons meme, which while we were looking at Shitpost, Zach was like, oh, another Simpsons meme getting Shitpost of the Week. And I was like, yeah, it's our whole fucking brand, dude. It's,
it is, yes.
And this one is from Isaac Kelleher, who is, as far as I know, a first-time meme correspondent in Auspol Shitposting. And knocked out of the park this week. This meme is from the one where the episode where Homer is Mr. Burns' personal assistant, and he's making him breakfast and he keeps setting shit on fire. And so this is Homer wearing a chef's hat, and he's labeled Liberal Party, and he pours some cereal into a bowl, and the cereal is labeled Cuts to Fire Service. And then he pours some milk in, and the milk is labeled Climate Change, and then the bowl bursts into fire, and he looks slightly alarmed. Which
it's a solid ass meme.
Yeah, very. It's quality shit.
Yeah. it's really like form and function are really coming together here. great work, Isaac. Congratulations on your first win. We hope to see many more quality ship posts from you in the future. And thank you also for leading us very neatly into our main course.
Mm-hmm. Which we were thinking about titling Flame Grilled Fuckwits, except we're not allowed to have swears in our episode title or description.
I guess I was thinking, you know, like S-Town, Shit-Town, that part. It's a famous podcast. Whatever.
Okay.
I'll just call it Flame Grilled F-Wits, and everybody will get the...
We're not allowed self...
I know you're not allowed to self-censor, but I feel like self-censoring is like F... Star. Asterisk. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So,
all
look,
right. If this episode gets taken down...
If we get cancelled, if iTunes pulls us from the iTunes store, which they can do...
Yeah.
Because of some swearing or self-censoring swearing in the title... you'll know why. So hopefully
then
this
we'll be effed.
Stupid segment is worth it.
Yeah.
Well, it's not... Look.
This is one... the last stupid segment probably wasn't. No offense, Isaac. But this upcoming one, again, kind of serious. So get prepared for that emotional whiplash in the opposite direction.
Yeah, well, it's a combination, I suppose. Go on.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the fires, which has just been the major story this week, other than Kumanjaya Walker's death. It feels like the whole north end of the country is on fire. There's, I think, 100 million hectares of bushfires in Australia at the moment.
Hundreds
it's just literally of homes inconceivable. Lost and yeah. At least 4 people dead. We had a bit of trouble confirming. I had heard 6 on the radio this morning. I'm not sure about that, but a lot of people have died. And it's horrifying. And obviously there's been... a lot of discussion in the media and the public sphere about
rational, balanced,
nonpartisan,
sensible,
about
productive
why the fires are here and what we should do about them now.
Mm, yeah, because which I think we've got great national political discourse in this country. Mm-hmm. So, now to take a big sip of water and see what these politicians have been saying.
There's been a bunch of really awful takes, and I think that's the sound of Zach taking a sip of water before reading Barnaby Joyce's take on this. Barnaby...
there's a level-headed commentator if I ever saw one.
Yeah, even more so than the rest of our nuanced and thoughtful political class. The Nats and a bunch of other people have been blaming the Greens for the bushfires on the basis that the Greens oppose backburning, and that therefore all of the fires are personally the fault of every Greens voter.
Including the ones who have died.
Yeah, so this is the real, like, flaming hot blessed take. We've had a blessed take already. Yeah, that's fine. Well, it's a pretty flaming hot one, and Barnaby said... basically, the people who died probably voted Greens, and I don't want to be critical of them for that, but it's all the Greens' fault for opposing backburning. It's just disgusting. And like he's being like, look, I don't want to make this a political point about my political opponents, but my political opponents are dead, and it's their fault. What a fucking bellend and idiot.
Just the fact that this is what we're talking about, not just us, you know, because
everyone in the country,
that this is what the story has become. It's become a story of the government's refusal to acknowledge the underlying causes of these fires and their absolutely fucking absurd attempts to redirect the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on whether or how much credit you give Barnaby Joyce, because saying something as fucking outrageous as it's the Greens' fault these fires happened and those people who died in the fires probably voted Green, like somebody who gave him a little bit of credit as a political operator might say that, oh wow, suddenly he's made the conversation not even about whether or not these are caused by climate change.
The dead cat strategy, yeah. As people say, you put a dead cat on the table and then everyone's like, oh my God, that's a dead cat, instead of addressing the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think that is giving him a bit much credit, especially because I think he thought he was carefully framing this comment in a way that couldn't possibly reflect badly on him, where he's like, look, I don't want to be negative about the Greens because these people voted Green. I think he thought he was being clever and subtle about it, but I mean, who knows?
Right, so the alternative is we just have fucking dunces as elected representatives.
I think that is the most likely explanation.
I mean, that's some real Occam's razor type shit.
People always say that about, you know, is it stupidity or malice? And I think it's normally pretty easy to tell that it's both. and that's definitely the case in this situation. And look, there's this claim that it's the Greens' fault for opposing backburning is...
Yeah, and we looked into this because I like specifically went to Noonan and I was like, a bunch of right-wing politicians are saying this. Where are they getting it from? I want to know.
And non-politicians, just like people on the internet.
Well, sure. I mean, but where are they? They're getting it from the politicians. So I kind of wanted to try and follow this claim back to its source to see if there was, like, I don't know, one time in like a local council meeting once 15 years ago where a Greens person like swung a vote and was like, no, we can't backburn for 1 month or something. And to see if they'd extrapolated from there.
I honestly think this is... we looked it up and the answer is basically no. And someone, Professor...
It's just lies.
Ross Bradstock at the University of Wollongong says, these are very tired and very old conspiracy theories that get a run after most fires. It's simply conspiracy stuff. It's an obvious attempt to deflect the conversation away from climate change and that they're without foundation. But I think that this claim is because reactionaries think they understand what greenies want, and they think greenies love trees and that anything that hurts any tree is therefore anti-environmentalism, and that therefore the greenies oppose clearing like bracken and the other stuff that's dealt with backburning and hazard reduction.
Oh my God.
Because they're made of plant, therefore the greenies love them and don't want their precious plant souls injured or something. Which is just ridiculous and insane. But like
that's some amazing galaxy brain conservative take shit.
It is. It relies...
And it makes so much sense that you said it.
Yeah, I don't have much faith in the conservatives, but I do have faith in their faith in themselves to correctly figure out the 4D chess that the Greenies are playing here.
So what do the Greenies have to say for themselves?
In my experience on the internet, they've mostly just been linking to the Greens party policy on backburning and hazard reduction, which is like, yes, we should do it. which, surprisingly, hasn't convinced all of these hard-nosed skeptics on the right. It's almost as if their opinions aren't founded in evidence, but hey, the other thing that the
it's
Greens have been saying in their defense, the other thing that the Greens / Greenies have been saying in their defense is that they've never been in power and have never had an opportunity to have any impact on this discussion
to implement their rabidly anti-backburning agenda.
Exactly, yeah. I think is a reasonable position, but not one that's likely to have much impact on the people who are saying that shit.
When it's like you start talking, that was exactly what you're saying. You're like, I was gonna say fighting fire with fire, but that's not right. And you're not fighting fire with water because that's effective. So you're fighting fire by trying to rationally argue with it, I guess.
And
like basically none of these positions that are being held by, you know, Barnaby Joyce or conservatives are based in fact or reality. Why would combating them with facts and reality make any difference?
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
There's another aspect of this that I kind of wanted to touch on, which is about the, like, oh, we shouldn't be discussing climate change during an emergency. And, you know, last week we had a big brain take from big brain Matt Bevin being like, oh, maybe we shouldn't talk about this while people are fleeing in fear. Bevin Shields, not Matt Bevin. Yeah. Matt Bevin is fine. Yeah, Bevin Shields, sorry.
And Gladys Berejiklian and also getting a question about climate change in a press conference and being like, not today.
Yeah.
Not today. You guys have so little humanity compared to me. I have so much humanity.
I've been cutting money from the New South Wales Fire Service for the whole time I've been in power. How do you think I feel today? yeah.
It's so, also not time today to talk about that either.
No, no. and this is kind of a silly point that I want to make in response, but...
Do it.
Thanks. I was going to. This is my show. No one can stop me. Well, you probably could stop me, honestly. You could press the stop record button. But
yeah, I could definitely take you physically.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I am a weak noodle. Anyway, my not very convincing point is that as climate change gets worse and as the fire season extends, because obviously that's kind of what's really so shocking about these fires, is that they're happening fucking...
More frequently and for longer.
Like months earlier than the bushfire season. Yeah. And they're at this like newly instated catastrophic level, which is the highest rating possible. And normally you might expect that would happen like halfway through the bushfire season, at the peak of the bushfire season. But instead, it's happening like a month and a half before the fire season begins. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years we have to update our fire rating system again so there's like a super ultra catastrophic level, because this is just the start of the fire season. And in another month or two, I think it's going to be even worse. But anyway... As the fire season gets longer...
And there are more and more fires.
We're not allowed to talk about climate change during the fires. Like, 3 years from now, there's going to be like a 1.5 week period in the middle of winter where we're allowed to talk about climate change. And then the fires are going to start up again, and we're not going to be allowed to mention it again for another like 9.5 months.
Look, on the one hand, that's extremely dark. But on the other... 100% of climate change conversation in this country is extremely fucking depressing, because it's just people dashing themselves at this unfeeling wall of conservative ignorance.
Like money-hungry greed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ignorance. I think it's like deliberately avoiding facing reality.
Yeah.
For the most part. For the political class.
You're right. That's a better... it's like willful ignorance,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
what I was trying to say. But yes. So having to not hear that all the time... I mean, sure, there'd be bushfires all the time, but also, I don't know, I spend that time catching up on, I don't know, old Jackie Chan movies. Or
there's another, like, thing that the right has been saying, which is that, like, Australia couldn't control climate change. So even if we had done everything in our power to stop climate change, that wouldn't make a difference to these bushfires happening right now. And on some level, I think there's some truth to that because, you know, the climate is a global system, yada, yada, yada. And Australia's the emissions that we as a country are responsible for are less than 1% of the world's global emissions. Now, I have two main things I want to say back to that. One, if every country that had less than 1% of the world's global emissions cut that to zero, that would be a third of the world's global emissions. So shut the fuck up. And two, Australia is the world's largest exporter of coal, and we export something like a third of the world's coal supply. And that is not counted in our domestic carbon budget. But I've done some rough numbers on this, and so don't quote this in your like university science essay or whatever. But
oh, fuck.
The world's global emissions, 72% of those emissions are from energy generation. And something like half of that is from coal, and something like a third of that is from Australia. So that's something like 15 to 20% of the world's global emissions that we're single-handedly responsible for. So, in conclusion...
Yeah, but we make that money, though.
Yeah, we make that money, though. I guess that is worth destroying all of these people's homes and farms and lives.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head.
We're going to hit a budget surplus. Yeah.
This was going to eventually lead into a really silly idea for a new segment. Do you want to still do that?
I'm not sure we've got time, but...
We're running pretty long, and I don't have time to make the new sting today.
Well, we'll bring it to you again in the next couple of weeks. I think it's a good
concept. Stay tuned for a new segment. Oh my God, you guys.
Yeah.
You're going to have to listen to the next episode. You've got literally no other choice. This has been a relatively long one. We didn't really wrap that story up with a perspective particularly.
Well, the fires, are they the Greens' fault?
No.
Cool.
Okay.
It's wrapped up.
Hey, good job.
Nice.
That's some...
We're fucking pseudo journalists.
Opinions. opinionistas. Definitely time to end the show.
Cool.
thank you so much for listening. We it makes us feel great.
It does.
And I hope you've been enjoying it.
We haven't got any reviews on iTunes this week, but we really are thirsty for them. They're very nice to read, and we like reading them out on the show.
Yes, and that's a good point. But more importantly, they do help us rise in the iTunes rankings. Theoretically, the way that those charts operate is a little bit arcane. But look, ratings can't be a bad thing. Please, if you like the show and you haven't yet, give us the old 5 stars on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. We read out the reviews on the show, even the mediocre or shit ones.
Yeah.
If you really, really like the show and you want to hear more of us shit talking, please sign up to our Patreon. If you sign up for $1 a month, you get a monthly bonus episode. And this week is bonus episode week, or technically next week, but there's one coming, in the next few days. Those episodes tend to be even more rambly, looser, and shit-talkier than the regular
less
ones.
Less current affairs-y.
Yeah, so if you're interested to hear that or just want to help us out, please head over to our Patreon and support us. It means a great deal. It means that we can upgrade our gear. It means that we can pay for our podcast hosting. It means that we can give a fee to our guests when they come on the show, which we think is really important. And also follow us on Twitter.
At OzPulseNeckPod.
Also like our Facebook page.
It's called OzPulseNeckPod.
There's more memes coming up on that.
Yeah,
page.
Yeah. We've got another high effort meme coming your way in the next little while. Oh, also, I fucking got interviewed by Junkie this week about our Simpsons meme, which was that's a little news of the show. So hopefully there'll be a Junkie article with me sounding pretentious about Simpsons memes in it. So I'll keep an eye out for that one.
I just also want to say that when the Steamed Hams video started to blow up and we're just kind of sitting there with our fingers crossed, watching the numbers go up and then hoping that Simpsons Against the Liberals would share it.
Yeah.
And then they did. And then I sent Noon a message, and I have fucking receipts for this.
Yeah.
I sent Noon a message being like, okay, the completion of the successful meme cycle is that we need to get a Junkie article written about us.
And lo and behold, here it comes.
A Junkie writer popped into the comments like 2 days later,
yep,
tagging his editor.
The editor, yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, stay tuned for that. We'll post that if and when it happens. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.